Welcome to the lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN family of podcasts, and we've got a terrific podcast for you today as we're going to be joined in the second segment by one of my good friends, Jason Reitowitz. He does work all over the place. This man is with a wide variety of different platforms, covers, odds checker. He actually used to be an assistant for Hartford as well, their men's basketball team, so we get a nice little perspective there. We're going to be talking about some of the games for today, what he's been noticing this season, and I know you guys asked me a couple questions about handicapping some of these non-conference games, some of these games in neutral courts, what happens when you get on a really, really good slash a really, really bad streak as well. And we're going to be talking about that and so much more with them. So it's going to be a very well-rounded conversation. And then in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every single game on this Thanksgiving Day Thursday as we hit some bank shots. So hopefully you all are having a very nice Thanksgiving with friends, family, loved ones, what have you. And hopefully we can make you a little bit of money throughout the process as well. And this is a podcast that is dedicated to things, making you guys more informed about college basketball in general and just being able to make you guys money in general as well. And you got one or two ways to be able to fire in questions if you have them for this podcast. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Going to be talking to Jason about a lot of the questions that you guys wound up asking, like gauging neutral court games and everything like that. So we're going to leave a lot of that to the second segment, but we wound up seeing a great day of college basketball on Wednesday. So let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The trend of Syracuse not being very good in the non-con continues as I wound up taking them, unfortunately. Fortunately, took the under as well as VCU catches yet another under. They are 5-0 to the under, but 67-55. VCU winds up being able to get it done in the battle for Atlanta as Syracuse goes 5 of 23 from 3 and 18 of 62 from the floor. They actually win the rebound battle 43-38, but they also committed 16 turnovers for VCU, a team that has been terrible at shooting threes all season long. They wind up getting a 3-of-4 performance off the bench from Marcus Siones, the transfer from Washington. He was able to chip in their 12 points, and then you wind up getting a combined 19 points out of Jaden Nunn along Keyshawn Curry as they wind up being able to go a combined 4-of-6 from 3-point range. Bayheim squared, Buddy and Jimmy, they had a combined 37 points, and really the rest of Syracuse could not do anything as they wound up having 0 points off the bench. So that was a good old thanks for nothing sort of performance out there, but he wound up seeing in the Bad Boy Moore's battle for Atlantis as well, a double overtime game that was really awesome. UConn and Auburn. UConn winds up being able to get it done in double overtime by kind of 115-109. They'll be playing Michigan State. We'll get to them in a minute. But for UConn, 15 of 26 from 3-point range and 32 of 38 from the free throw line. And they're one of the better defensive teams in all of college basketball. They wound up winning the rebound battle by a kind of 48-35 as Auburn. They themselves went 33 of 41 from the line. They wind up going 12 of 30 from 3-point range. KD Johnson really was able to carry the mail for Auburn with 27 points. And how about UConn being able to get this done with Isaiah Whaley along with Andre 3000 Jackson, giving you a combined 2 points before both wound up following up, but they got 46 points off the bench. So that was an absolutely superb performance from UConn. And I mentioned it a little bit earlier with Michigan State. They get by Loyola Chicago. This line winds up closing too. So if you took Loyola on the open, you were able to get there. If you took them on the close, well, it was a little bit more of a horse apiece situation. 63-61 the final, as this is one that was adjusting between two, saw some 2.5s out there. So this one really depended on your number, but for Michigan State, they do go 6 of 14 from 3-point range. Gabe Brown was able to chip in their 9 points as he wound up hitting a trio of 3s, but the guy that really got it done, Malik Hall. How about 9 of 9 from the floor, 5 of 5 at the free throw line, highly efficient, and this looks more like the Loyola Chicago that we all know and love, playing a very slow and methodical game as Lucas Williamson was able to chip in their 16 points, but solid showing from both teams. What has not been a solid showing is what we've seen out of the Horizon League so far this year, as you had Wright State wind up losing as a double-digit favorite to Long Beach State by a count of 85-76. Lone team in the Horizon League doing well right now is Oakland. We'll get to them in a minute, but how about for Wright State Grant Basile was able to give you 26 points, but they allow a Long Beach A team that has not been very good to be able to just completely go off with 22 points and 10 rebounds off the bench from Joe Hampton and for Wright State, a bunch of which was always pretty solid on the glass when they had Loudon Love. They got destroyed 38-27 in that category. Meanwhile, you take a look at Oakland. They're looking pretty solid out there in the Rising League. They wind up taking down a solid Delaware team by a count of 81-73. Oakland prior to this game, they had been looking to go a little bit more slow, but how about Jamal Cain? He was able to get the team to victory. 28 points, 9 boards, and then you wind up having Jalen Moore give you some more. How about 16 points, 9 boards, 6 assists for a player that led all of college basketball in terms of assists per game last season? And then for Delaware, got to give a little bit of a nod to a gentleman that wanted coming off the bench in Jamarco Artelli. He was able to give the team 16 points, 6 boards, 3 assists. I think both of these teams are going to be contenders out there in their respective conferences, just like I think that Yale has a good chance of being able to, if not win the Ivy League, be very close as they take down UW-Milwaukee by kind of 69-56. The big thing in this one is that Pat Baldwin Jr., he wound up getting injured a little bit earlier in this tournament against Bowling Green, did not wind up playing in this one, and UW-Milwaukee did go 9-23 from three-point range, but you could tell that they were playing at a more slow pace. You wound up having Yale win the rebound battle by a count of 42-37, so that did not wind up working out very well for the Panthers. We also saw a very good battle of two teams that come from very smart schools, Harvard and Colgate. The Raiders of Colgate wind up going down to Harvard in overtime, 89-84. I think that both of these teams have a good chance of being able to win their conference. I think that I wound up having Harvard at number one in my projector of finish in the preseason, the Ivy League. I certainly had Colgate, and this doesn't change my opinion of them as Colgate, 11 of 24 from three-point range, but you take a look at what Harvard was able to do. They went 16 of 35 from three-point range as you wound up having a quadron of guys for Harvard give you at least 15 points apiece. Meanwhile, for Colgate, Nelly Cummings, 25 points, 5 assists. These are two very good mid-majors, so it was good to see them take center stage. Good to see Monmouth get a win over a Princeton team that Princeton actually has some good wins to their credit. They lose in double overtime to Minnesota. They wind up knocking off South Carolina. They take down Oregon State on the road, but I do feel like it's a little bit hollow at this point. They benefited from some good situations, and Monmouth, they win by kind of 76-64 as they go 10 of 27 from three-point range. George Pappas, 20 points in this one, so he looked very good there. Speaking of looking very good, that would be another team from a smart school. That would be Boston U. They were down 8 points with 45 seconds left to go against Florida State. They force overtime, and they darn near pull it off as Matthew Cleveland had to put in there a putback layup to be able to lift Florida State to the outright win, 81-80 for Boston U. They were very much game in this one. Your concern has always been with Boston free throw shooting, 17 of 20 from the line. Florida State just a little bit better in this spot, but for Boston U, they won the rebound battle 34-32. They really got their style. This is a team that could be dangerous out there in the Patriot League as well, as you wound up having 16 points and 12 rebounds out of Sukmail Mathon. I like his game, and Javonte McCoy was able to pour in their 22 points, and shows where the ACC is currently at right now, as well as it's not necessarily the prettiest state of affairs there. Butler and Chaminade. You wound up having Butler get a convincing win there, so we can move on there. And for Xavier, I don't understand why they were ranked. I'm not necessarily too bullish on this team, and Iowa State is a bunch that I thought was going to be dead last in the Big 12 coming into the season. They're trying to prove me wrong, and so far, so good. 82-70, the final, as Iowa State goes 10 of 20 from three-point range. Isaiah Brockington, 30 points, 6 boards. Cape Gelsher, he is a roll of the dice when it comes to what you're going to be able to get out of him, but he was able to chip in their 12 points as well. And for Xavier, 3 of 21 from three-point range. They could really use Zach Fremantle at this point. You were able to get a double-double out of Kobe Jones, 11 points, 12 rebounds, but pretty much everyone else, aside from Jack Nunge, who went 9 of 11 from the floor, was a big, giant no-show. And this one, Seton Hall, they get the win, but boy, they were unable to cover against a Cal team that is looking a little bit scrappy. 62-59 the final. Andre 3000 Kelly for this Cal team. 23 points, 11 rebounds. This was a little bit of an eyesore of a game as you wound up having both of these teams play a very slow tempo. Seton Hall got the job done because they wound up going 24 of 30 from the free throw line as you wound up having Jared Roden give you 21 points, 7 rebounds. And for Cal, they do go just 4 of 12 from three-point range, and the 14 turnovers did wind up costing them as Seton Hall wound up having only 6. Something very significant to take a look at when it comes to handicapping. Got to be taking a look at Fades of Michigan at this point, as there was great promise for this team coming into the year, and right now they certainly are not living up to it, as Tarleton State wound up pushing them relatively to the brink. 65-54 the final for Michigan. They go 6 of 18 from three-point range. They were able to get a double-double out of Caleb Houston as he had 14 points, 10 rebounds. Hunter Dickinson did his job down low with 10 boards as Michigan won this game on the glass 37-21. But for Tarleton State, they were able to stay in this game because Michigan, they were turning the ball over all over the place. 21 turnovers. Tarleton State is good at that, and they only wound up having 9 turnovers of their own as Montre Gibson was able to give you 17 points for Tarleton State, just 5 of 17 from three-point range. But give Tarleton State a lot of credit. They were able to hang in this one, and they were very much a game opponent. We're going to be talking about this team a little bit later with Jason Radowitz, but one of the bigger disappointments of the college basketball season, and it cannot be denied, I was talking about Wright State. They're up there, but so is Oregon. 78-49, they wind up losing to Houston. Losing to Houston is not necessarily a bad thing. Losing to Houston in this fashion is just sad, as Oregon couldn't get to 20 points in the first half once again. Houston winds up being able to shoot a little bit over 50% from the floor. You wind up having Josh Carlton, Carlton coming off the bench, 13 points. Fabian White, 15 points, 7 boards, and for Oregon, they go 5 of 19 from three-point range. They turn the ball over 19 times. They wind up losing the rebound battle by a count of 34-26. They just wind up getting outclassed in every facet of basketball. And right now, Pac-12 just not having a good go of it in general. Arizona State was able to claw their way back against Baylor. Baylor was able to get the job done, but they were able to do a little bit more, but certainly not a squad that is probably going to be competing for a top 25 berth at any point this year. But Washington, after they wound up actually getting a relatively solid win against South Dakota State, they followed up by getting just bludgeoned by Nevada by a count of 81-62, a Nevada team that they themselves have had their struggles. For Washington, they go 9 of 17 from the free throw line. Really, the only guy that's performing for this team is Sherrill Brown Jr. 19 points, 5 boards, 4 assists. He has looked relatively solid. And then you take a look at Nevada. They wound up having Grant Shurfield and Desmond Cambridge combined for 44 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and a partridge in a pear tree, as they wound up going and combined 5 of 15 from 3-point range. And Nevada, they wound up doing this without A.J. Brahma and KJ Himes. So reinforcements are going to be on the way for Nevada, so I'm going to be taking a look at them to perhaps be able to ascend. Also looking to ascend is both the Wisconsin Badgers and also St. Mary's. They wound up playing in the final of the Maui Invitational, and Wisconsin is able to get it done. It wasn't necessarily the most comfortable of wins, but they do win by a count of 61-55. For those like me that had the over, that was a little bit tough, but Wisconsin able to get just enough despite Brad Davison going just 1 of 10 from the floor, as Johnny Davis, 20 points, 7 rebounds, was a real hero for this team. And how about Tyler Wall as well? 4 blocks, 18 points. Meanwhile, for St. Mary's, a very good showing here. They wound up turning the ball over 16 times, but they were able to play some very stifling defense to be able to keep themselves in it, as the entire West Coast Conference has looked very solid. I'm not going to be able to recap the Santa Clara game because of how late the tip was, and I'm actually on the look at when it comes to the Vegas Ads and Information Network both today, and I'll also be on there on very early Friday morning, late Thursday night if you're out there on the West Coast, as 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Pacific, 1 to 4 a.m. Eastern time. So pretty much the same time as the Greg Peterson Experience, doing some filling work there. So I have no fear. I'm working very hard this Thanksgiving and very happy to be doing so. And also working very hard for your bankroll. That'd be St. Louis. St. Louis able to get the win, and they're able to get the cover against Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin, as you were able to get an over in this one as well. And for St. Louis, they did a solid job. Not necessarily taking a lot of threes, but they did wind up going 6 of 16 from distance for Stephen F. Austin. Just not a disciplined team in general. They wound up committing quite a few turnovers, 14 in this one. And for St. Louis, the guy that was able to step up, Gibson Jimerson, he was able to give the team a double-figure amount of points. And then how about Martin Lisson? You knew that someone was going to need to step up with Jordan Perkins on the fold, 17 points, 8 boards, so he was certainly able to get things going there. You wound up having Vanderbilt take it to Pittsburgh in the Kevin Stallings Bowl, as, boy, that guy was not a good coach, but they were able to get it done there. And if you're taking a look at another notable result that we wound up seeing from a college basketball Wednesday, how about Air Force not getting the cover against Denver after they wound up getting up by kind of 22 points at the half. Early on in the second half, they were up by 23 points, but Denver makes it a one-point game, 66-65, as Air Force, well, they didn't have a lot of fans in the stands in that one. Also got to give a little bit of kudos to Fordham. Fordham winds up taking down Rice as about a 6.5-point underdog, 84-74. Kyle Neptune doing an absolutely terrific job when it comes to this program and when it comes to college basketball in general. What we're noticing from a trend standpoint is that the under still has a little bit of an edge, but we have seen overs be able to give you a little bit more life. We now have for the season, as I do this right now, 424 unders and 397 overs. So that is about a 51.6% hit rate to the under this via covers. But if you take a look over the last 7 days as I record this, 186 unders, 192 overs. So we've actually seen more overs than unders in the last 7 days of college basketball. I think the bookmakers wanted to make a little bit of an adjustment. And I know that our guest, Jason Rydowitz, is someone that likes home underdogs. They are now 104-91-3 against the spread as I record this. I think there might be one or two stragglers before this winds up going live, but certainly has been a very good trend. And let's talk to our man, Jason Rydowitz. Does a great job with so many different platforms. He does a great job over there at Covers, The Game Day when it comes to NFL and MLB. You've got Bookmakers Review. List goes on and on. We're going to be taking a look forward to the games that we're going to be seeing today in college basketball and just get his thoughts on the first few weeks of the college basketball season in general. Ask a little bit about handicapping, neutral court games, and why you should never get outside of yourself as a handicapper as well. That is coming up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Peters, and now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and it is great to be joined by our guest as this man does some terrific work at a wide variety of different places. The Game Day MLB when it comes to his baseball work, Bookmakers Review, Covers, list goes on and on. Betting Pros NFL when it comes to more of the NFL. And to be able to follow our guest, Jason Rydowitz, on Twitter, that is at Jason_Rydowitz, last name is spelled R-A-D-O-W-I-T-Z. And Jason, it is always great to have you aboard. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, I appreciate you having me. First time on the College Basketball Podcast, and I know that's your bread and butter here. I love seeing all the traction on Twitter for you. Very well deserved, and it's just lots of fun to see all your success.
It is great to have you aboard, and it is great that we've got college basketball back in our lives, and we're a little bit over 2 weeks into the season thus far, and what have been some of your big takeaways from it? Because it certainly has been an interesting season. It certainly has been full of calamities, underdogs. It's had a little bit of everything. What has been your main takeaway, though?
Yeah, look, this has been a fun season so far. And, you know, I thought you had this a little bit earlier. I've had it too. When we give out a play and it, you know, loses by 20, when all the other plays sit and people want to complain about it. But that's what people don't kind of realize when it's college basketball. You're going to have those moments. You're going to have those types of games from different teams. And, like, you know, for example, Oregon, they look absolutely horrible right now. I don't think that will last forever. But I mean, that's one of my biggest takeaways right now is Oregon, how bad they've been playing. And then, of course, St. Mary's, they look extremely good, probably better than I expected to start the season. So it's been a lot of fun. And then, of course, Memphis with all those freshmen starting off the season undefeated. So that's really interesting to see. You know, they have a little bit of depth now at Memphis. So lots of interesting things going on in college basketball. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it certainly has been. We have seen some of those surprise teams. And when it comes to a team that we're going to be seeing, not tomorrow, but rather on Friday, Gonzaga, we saw them on Tuesday wind up just putting a walloping on UCLA. Now, I didn't think that UCLA should have been the number two team in all of college basketball, but I need to play against the, and I air quotes here, ranked number two team in all of college basketball and beat them by 20 on a neutral court. It just shows how big I think the gap is between number one and everyone else in college basketball right now. I don't know how you wind up having it, and I don't think Gonzaga is going to be going undefeated or anything like that this year just due to the schedule alone, but I do feel like Gonzaga is really cementing themselves as the clear number one team in college basketball.
Yeah, so look, it pays to take really good shots. It pays to, you know, be big. Obviously, they're really, really tall, one of the top teams in height in college basketball. But, you know, again, when you have the top offense in the league and a defense that, you know, it's done really, really well, limiting the offensive rebounds from the opposition, it's obviously really helpful. And so Gonzaga, they're really, really deep. They're really, really good. You know, they're obviously the best team in the nation for a reason.
Yep, I agree with you, as we do have Jason Rydowitz joining me on the podcast. And Jason, when it comes to gauging neutral court games, we've obviously got a lot of them, both coming up today and just for the rest of the week in general. Does your handicapping change a little bit? Because I do think that there's a lot of theories when it comes to this. I personally do wind up taking a little bit more of a look at unders. When it comes to neutral court games, you wind up having strange surroundings. Some of these games are played in like football stadiums. Other of these games, they're played in very intimate gyms. You get some hard rims, like you wind up seeing in the Battle for Atlantis. You get some soft rims as well. How do you wind up gauging these neutral court games? Because I think that it is always one of the biggest challenges that we face every year.
Yeah, you know, so far I have not looked at overs and unders to start the season. I've been kind of mainly sticking around home underdogs, slight underdogs, you know, around that, you know, 1 to 5, 6 range, and, you know, or teams that just, you know, I expect to win outright getting plus the points. So that's kind of been my niche early on so far. I've been taking one game a day, and I am 8-4 through the first 12 days. That's been working for me, so I'm kind of sticking on that niche. I know you and I are very opposite in the way we handicap games, and, you know, we're both really successful. So it goes to show, you know, everyone that's listening, that just find what you're good at, find what you're comfortable with, and you're going to find success if you just stick with it. Don't start a strategy and then stop it a week later and then try a new strategy. For me, for example, I just like to stick with that plus points for the home underdogs or a rogue team or even a neutral team, like we were talking about just, you know, a second ago. Just find those teams that you just think, you know, have the advantage getting, you know, plus the points. And so far, that's been what's working out for me.
And I think that that's so important as well, to just know yourself as a better, because there are some people like myself that thrive on volume. There are others that if they tried to pick more than 3 games a day, it would be cataclysmically bad as well. And when people wind up going through some losing streaks, and we've seen it this week as well, where you just have these unprecedented runs. How many times haven't we seen it this week in which a team winds up getting up 15 points and they lose by double digits? It's one of those things where you need to take a look at some of these. And when you get a case like an SMU where they have blown more double-digit leads in the last 12 months than I think any other team in college basketball history. I've not done my research, but they have to have, just taking a look at it. But, I mean, aside from if you wind up seeing a big, giant trend like that, I think the most important thing is to not get outside of yourself. If you're a high-volume player, don't wind up just shrinking your volume because of a couple bad beats. And if you're a low-volume player, you wind up being on the wrong end of one or two. Don't wind up forcing up plays to try to counteract those one or two bad beats.
Yeah, look, I agree completely. Like, sometimes I'll get people on Twitter congratulating me on a win when a team is up by 15 with, like, you know, 10 minutes to go. I ask, you know, politely to not do that because, you know, you and I know this very well, that no game is ever over. We've seen bigger comebacks with less time than that. So no game is ever over. I'm always sweating. I had a team at plus 10.5, Long Beach State. Had that plus 10.5, they were up 6 at halftime. So you have a 16.5 point cushion. And then at one point, they were down in the second half by 7 points. And obviously, they came back to beat Wright State, and I got the W. But you just never know. I mean, that's a big swing going from being up by 6 and then being down by 7 within 6 minutes of the second half. So yeah, keep a level head, like you said, and no game is over until it's over. I was sweating Long Beach State even when they were up by 7 or 8 with just 2 minutes to go, because again, what if it goes to overtime? What if the game goes to overtime and, you know, Long Beach State loses momentum and then they struggle in overtime and then they end up losing by 11? You just never know. So yeah, no celebrating until the game is actually over.
I mean, we saw bad beats this week with that Troy versus Jacksonville State game. The game winds up going over with like a half a second left in triple overtime. So, I mean, calamities do wind up happening in college basketball. I once saw a team, I think it was Kent State versus North Carolina A&T. North Carolina A&T was getting 14 points. The game goes to overtime and they don't cover 14 in overtime. So, I mean, you laugh all you want, but it does actually happen. So I'm glad that you bring that up, as we do have Jason Rydowitz trying to be right here on the podcast. Does a great job with covers and so many other platforms. And Jason, we've got some great basketball that is going to be coming up for Thanksgiving. Now, as we're doing this, we've got a couple to-be-determined matchups as well, which always makes things a little bit tricky. But With that said, we do know a lot of the matchups that are going to be going down in the ESPN Invitational's game. Like, you've got North Texas versus Kansas, with that being a relatively big spread. But one that really catches my eye, Mississippi State versus Louisville. I'm seeing Louisville as a one-point underdog. They're going to be without their coach, Chris Mack, once again in this game. And I don't know if I'm missing something here, but I think Mississippi State should be much more than a one-point favorite. Not sure if you've got any thoughts on this game, but I really like the Bulldogs in this spot.
Yeah, look, Louisville has not looked great to start the season, you know, despite their record of 3-1. They lost to Furman, which is, you know, not a bad loss. You know, Furman, when they're on offensively, they're going to perform, they'll be fine, but only beating Detroit Mercy by 6, and then, you know, they had a good win against Navy, Southern, whatever. They're, you know, bottom tier team. But this is really Louisville's first game against a top opponent. We'll see how they do in this game. You know, it's also Mississippi State. So, yeah, it's an interesting game on the neutral court. Mississippi State so far, yeah, they've looked like, you know, a better defense, holding, you know, teams to, you know, a lower effective field goal percentage. They're getting more turnovers. They've really done a great job of limiting fouls, but can they sustain that? Probably not. So if there's a team that probably could get to the line a little bit more frequently against Mississippi State, it will be Louisville. But, you know, Louisville, they're not shooting the three very well. Mississippi State, on the other hand, shooting 45.7% from three on the season. But again, this is a game where both teams, this is their first time going up against a high major team. So we will see how this goes. You know, Mississippi State, they have not looked good at the foul line. They haven't really gotten to the foul line very often. So can Louisville win this game by getting to the line a little bit more, as long as they can, you know, keep the ball and not turn the ball over as much? Yeah, it's a close game. It's going to be a fun one. That's why the line is very close to begin with as well. But yeah, I'm going to be rooting for Louisville because, you know, my family has a little bit of tie there. But at the end of the day, yeah, Mississippi State right now currently looks like the better team.
Yeah, it's been certainly a little bit of a tough go of it for the Louisville Cardinal. And when it just comes to the board that we've got for Thursday in general, pretty much we now know everything as we're doing this, aside from the Battle for Atlantis games, as those are going on as we do this podcast. But is there anything in particular that's really catching your eye? Since I know you've been talking about having some success with underdogs of right in that realm of about 1 to 6-ish points. And we've actually got quite a few on the board. Is there one or two that's really catching your eye?
So, you know, I'm not entirely sure that I want to bet on Thanksgiving. I might want to take a day off, but I'll look at this UConn-Michigan State game. I think that's a really interesting one. UConn, you know, they've been really impressive so far this season. I mean, what a game against Auburn yesterday. That was an incredible game. I mean, UConn, yeah, they blew it towards the end. And then, of course, against overtime, and they find a way. So a lot of credit for that against Michigan State. This will be a really fun game. And I don't know what to expect necessarily out of this game. I'm kind of rooting for UConn just a little bit because, you know, they've been good to my Hartford Hawks. You know, we got to play them last year. That was really nice. This can be a close game. It's going to be a fun one. Michigan State's shown some really good defense so far. Then you got Connecticut. They've just kind of had that heart in them. Obviously, with Sunogo, they're dominating on the glass. And maybe Connecticut's fouling a little bit too much, but they probably make up from the fouls by forcing the turnovers they do. And then also UConn's actually shooting the ball a lot better than I think any of us expected going through the season. While Michigan State has struggled a little bit, I think Hauser's been struggling a little bit there. I like Connecticut in this one.
UConn has been a team that I think is going to be a force out there in the Big East. I think that Villanova is clearly that number one, but I think that when it comes to UConn, Seton Hall, a team that we wound up seeing yesterday, you've got a couple of teams that have really been able to impress me in the early going from the Big East. Even Providence, though they wound up losing to Virginia, they've been able to have a relatively solid showing as well. And you never want to count out a Tom Izzo coach team, but his teams always seem to peak in March as well. And then when it comes to the earlier part of the season, they do seem to struggle a little bit. And I do think that that's something important as well, because you were talking about it at the top. Oregon, they look absolutely terrible right now. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But we've seen Oregon time and time again wind up having their struggles in the non-conference portion of the season. Then they wind up peaking in February and March. You see it from a team like Kentucky. We see it from, like I said, Michigan State. And I do think that that is something that you need to take into account as well. I'm going to be taking a look at Michigan State a little bit differently in February and March than I'm going to in November. And the same goes for Oregon.
I agree. And, you know, UConn, for me, they look really, really great right now. They've got a lot of momentum. And they've got a coach that just has all the energy in the world. And that helps, especially when you're in these tournaments and stuff, because it's like you know, having caffeine on the sideline. Look, I like Connecticut a lot, and I think that they're a terrific team, and they can definitely do some damage here against Michigan State early on Thanksgiving.
Good reference there, as I could use a Bang energy drink sponsor for this podcast, because they do help power it a little bit, and helping power this podcast today as well has been your interview, Jason. You do an absolutely terrific job over there with covers. You do a great job over there with betting pros, odds checker, list goes on and on. You do a wide variety of things. So love the good people at home. Know they're able to follow you on social media and just everything that you've got going on in general.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at Jason_Radowitz. That's RADOWITZ. Yeah, you know, I'm writing for all those sites that you mentioned. So got a lot of outlets that I could give out my work to. Again, I'm a low volume guy, so you'll see 1 to 2 plays a day at most. But, you know, for me, slow and steady wins the race. We've been very profitable, over $600 for people that have been betting about $100 units. So it's been lots of fun. It's been really cool, especially early on going 8-4 in college basketball, and of course, doing well in NFL and college football as well. With a little NBA in there, but it's rare that you'll see some NBA from me. Either way, it's been lots of fun. Loving this college basketball start, and it's only going to get better from here.
Oh, I'm right there with you. College basketball has been tremendous thus far, but we have just begun on it, and we have begun to get great guests on this podcast as well. Jason certainly fits the bill. He brings it every time. He joins this podcast and my baseball podcast, appropriately named the Baseball Betting Podcast, with Greg Peterson and Jason doing absolutely terrific work out there. So big thanks to him. Now it is that time of the podcast. Coming up next, I give you a signed total on every game on the college basketball betting board for this Thanksgiving Thursday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Peterson. Great to be able to get Jason Radowitz aboard. He does a great job over there with covers, odds checker, list goes on and on. You're able to find his work in a wide variety of places. He's joined me quite a few times on this podcast and always delivers. So a big thanks to him. Now it is that time of the podcast on this Thanksgiving Thursday that I give you a signed total on every game on the college basketball betting board for today in a little something you like to call bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at @unit_81. We're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. The reason why I do Las Vegas rotation order is because a lot of sites and apps that you wind up betting with, etc., this is the order that they typically wind up putting the games in, for one, and for two, when you wind up going out to Las Vegas, instead of giving out, oh, I would like to bet on Auburn laying umpteen amount of points or something like that, you would actually give out their rotation number. So that is why I wind up doing it this way. So we are going to have some fun with it as we begin with this first game of 783-784 on the betting board. UC San Diego is going to be taking on Southern Miss. This is a game in which we currently have no lines up because this is a part of a back-to-back. Both of these teams wound up playing yesterday, but I do like what I'm seeing out of UC San Diego, a bunch that entered India yesterday with a bunch of good wins on their resume, a road win against Cal, being able to completely thrash George Washington, and you've got Tony Udoka, who's been able to give you right around 17 points per game. He's been able to do an absolutely terrific job of being able to just give this team a wide variety of things, and then you take a look at Southern Miss, and you do have a couple guys that are able to chip in some good work for you. Tyler Stevenson down low has been able to give you 8 points per game. His scoring has been a little bit down, but you've been able to have someone come in DeAndre Pinkney, who's been able to give the team right around 7.5 points, 6 boards, rebounding. Actually isn't too bad for the Southern Miss team, as you've also got 6'10" Isaiah Moore winds up coming in from St. John's. Last year at St. John's, he had 9 points, right around 5 rebounds per game, and he entered into yesterday with 15.7 boards. Problem with the Southern Miss team is that you just don't have a lot of outside shooting going into yesterday, shooting 27% from 3, and you don't have that main ball handler. And on top of that, 16 turnovers per game. That is just not going to cut it. Jerron Pierre is going to be able to give you right around 8-9 points per game, but he's given out 3 turnovers, so right around 2 assists per game. That just is not cutting it. Tay Hardy is averaging over 20 points per game, but a lot of those points wound up coming in a game against a non-D1 school. And then you take a look at UC San Diego. It's not like they've got one main guy that's able to do a great job of being able to dish out the ball or anything like that, but it's just a guard unit that does a good job as a collective. And they entered into yesterday shooting 44% from 3-point range. Now, I do think that that's going to be dropping a little bit, but I mean, you take a look at some of these guys like a Bryce Pope, and they've been able to do a good job of being able to hit some outside shots. With Pope last year, he had 10 points per game, was shooting right around 40% from 3, so it's not like it's completely unsustainable. Michael Pearson Jr., he's a guy that's been able to shoot 30% from three. So you just take a look at this UC San Diego team. You've got a bunch of guys doing a great job with their sharpshooting. You're able to get just enough rebounding from Lokak and company. So I do wind up saying UC San Diego is a 5.5-point favorite. I am not high on the Southern Miss team at all when it comes to UC San Diego as well. This is a team that they've been able to force right around 7.5 steals per game. They do a good job of being able to hit their free throws as well at right around 76%. So I do wind up saying this total at 135 because UC San Diego looking to push a little bit more tempo. Southern Miss has been a very slow team with regards to their pace. 785, 786 on the betting board. Montana and UNC Wilmington are going to be doing battle. This is for the Zootown Classic. By the way, San Diego and Southern Miss going to be playing in the same location as this game. Missoula, Montana, as you've got the Grizzles, who I wound up setting as an 8-point favorite because this is pretty much a true home game for them with UNC Wilmington. Not a team that I've necessarily been bullish on the last few years. Ever since Kevin Keats wound up leaving for that NC State job, it certainly has been rough for this program, but you do have a couple guys that are able to do a nice job and be able to give this team some good production. Shaquem Phillips is giving you double figures. You've been able to have James Baker come in. He's been able to give the team right around 7 points, 6 boards as a little bit of a combo player. Began his career at Morehead State and was a starter last year on their team that wound up making the NCAA tournament. Michael Kudo is someone that intrigues me. He wound up last year being able to pump in their 14 points per game. Has been off to a little bit of a slower start this year. Entered into yesterday with 10.5 points per game, but take a look at UNC Wilmington. They have been half bad on defense. The offense has certainly had its struggles as they entered into yesterday, only registering right around 65 points per game, but you can tell that this is a team that they are embracing playing a little bit more slowly. And then you take a look at Montana. They are certainly going to have home court advantage in this game, but Montana's not necessarily a team that is impressing me as well. If you got a Montana bunch, you do have Brandon Whitney. He's been able to give the team 13.5 points. He's shooting from 3-point range right around 30%, has been able to give out 2.5 assists per game. And then you've got a guy in Cameron Parker who last year shot 45% from three, but was very skittish to shoot, 8.5 points per game. He wound up setting an NCAA record with 24 assists in a game a few seasons ago. I was at Sacred Heart, and you got Josh Bannon down low. He's able to give you 9 rebounds per game. Now, it does seem like UNC Wilmington might be dealing with an injury to Jalen Sims as well. This is someone who did not wind up being in the starting lineup yesterday for UNC Wilmington, so that affects things a little bit more. I was looking at UNC Wilmington being an 8-point underdog with Sims out there in the fold. Now, with Sims being out of the fold, I do wind up adjusting this 1.5, so I'm looking at being able to lay more around a 9.5 here with Montana. If Sims winds up going, it will be more like an 8-point line. So you do want to note that little bit of a discretion there, but when it comes to the total, I do think that it's going to be another slow and grimy game. It wouldn't really adjust too much whether or not Sims is going to be in or out of the fold, so I did wind up making this total a 133.5. As we move on to 787, 788 on the betting board, you've got UConn, and they're going to be taking on Michigan State. This is another game without numbers because both of these teams wound up playing yesterday, but I wound up saying Michigan State as a 1-point favorite. I think that this is going to surprise a lot of people, but when you take a look at this UConn bunch, I think that they're going to be gassed because they wound up playing a double overtime high-tempo game against Auburn yesterday. I think that that's going to take a lot out of these guys. And when it comes to this punch, they do a very good job on defense. They do a nice job of being able to pound the glass. With that said, you also do now have your foul issues when it comes to UConn because we saw yesterday Isaiah Whaley along with Andre Jackson combined for 2 points before both wound up fouling out of the game. So it's not necessarily what you want to be seeing. And I just don't think that there's any way that UConn duplicates the 15 of 26 three-point shooting that they wound up having. The bench yesterday shot 9 of 12 from three-point range with a combined 46 points. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. Now, RJ Cole is someone I do like. He's given the team 24 points, 6 assists in the game yesterday. Overall for the season, he's been able to chip in there more like 13 points per game. Odama Sanogo, I like what he's bringing to the table. He's been able to give the team 17 points right around 6 boards, but you do take a look at Michigan State, and I know that Joey Hauser has been a little bit of an enigma for this team, but I do think that he's going to be able to give you a tad bit of something. Marcus Bingham Jr. seems to be coming around a little bit. Both of these guys give you some size. Both of these guys are able to do a good job on the glass. You take a look at Gabe Brown as well. He's been able to do a nice job with right around 13 points per game. Someone that has 6'8" size is able to shoot from 3-point range. Max Christie has come along for the ride as well. He wound up having just 2 points in the game yesterday, but you take a look at his prior performances, he had a combined 31 points in the previous 2 games, so I think that this freshman is going to be able to chip in there some good production as well. I take a look at Michigan State, I do think that they've got quite a bit of depth against a UConn bunch, and let's face it, they're going to be gassed. You're noticing that Michigan State is playing a little bit slower this year, not quite as slow as last year, but they're certainly certainly not the Blazers that they've been in the past, and UConn certainly looking to slow things down as well. I set this total as a 131.5. I do think that things are going to be slowed down, and the rims out there at the Battle for Atlantis, they are hard. There is no forgiveness whatsoever, and I want to make Michigan State a one-point favorite along with that 131.5 total. We move on to 789, 790 on the betting board. We've got Loyola of Chicago facing off against Auburn. I wound up setting Auburn as a three-point favorite with a total of 143. This is currently off the board. I do think that Auburn is going to be a little bit gassed as well, or else I would have set them a point or two higher, but when it comes to Auburn, I do think that they're going to be able to just win the battle on the glass in general. You take a look at Walker Kessler, 14 points, 10 rebounds in the game yesterday against UConn. He is someone with 7'1" size. I think Loyola Chicago is going to be having a tough time with Katie Johnson. Has looked absolutely terrific for Auburn thus far. He's been able to give the team nearly 19 points per game. Not necessarily a guy that is going to give you a lot of rebounds. In a double overtime game yesterday, he wound up having 0 rebounds, so it's not necessarily what you want to see there. But how about Wendell Green Jr.? The transfer from Eastern Kentucky is able to give you 13 points. He's chipping in there right around 3.5 assists per game. He's able to give you a couple rebounds. He's an okay three-point shooter last year. Shot 36% from three-point range, so you've got some promise there. You've also been able to get quite a bit of something out of guys like A$AP Jasper, Devin Cambridge, and then you've got the star freshman in Jabari Smith, who yesterday wound up having 22 points and 6 rebounds. And then take a look at Loyola Chicago and Ryan Schwieger. It's someone that impresses me. Going into yesterday, he was averaging about 15 points per game for this Loyola Chicago team. With Loyola Chicago, I do think that they're going to get back to their identity a little bit more, playing a tad bit slower. They do really value the three-point shot, and Braden Norris is a solid three-point shooter. He's been shooting darn near 40% from three-point range this season, and you've also got a guy in Lucas Williamson that was a part of that Final Four team from a few years ago. He's been able to give the team 11.5 points. He's able to give you 6 boards as he's 6'4", do a little bit of everything sort of player, but I do think that the size of Auburn and just the speed in general is going to be tough, and I do think that there's going to be a little bit of late-game fouling, so set this total at 143 and made Auburn a three-point favorite. 791, 792 on the betting board. You've got yourself VCU against Baylor out there in the Battle for Atlantis. Once again, a game which we do not have numbers on, but I wound up setting a line. I've got Baylor as a 15.5 point favorite, and I wound up making this total 131.5. When it comes to VCU, they were able to get the job done yesterday against Syracuse, but Syracuse, let's call it what it is, they are currently flailing, so that is not necessarily too terrific. And then you take a look at VCU, Marcus Siones has been not what I've expected for this team, to say the least. I thought that he'd be able to give this team a little bit more offensive pop, and yesterday, VCU wound up being able to exceed 58 points for the first time all season. That is absolutely incredible. You got a VCU bunch of, they're shooting as a collective sub 30% from three-point range. You've been able to get a little bit of something out of Levi Stocker down low. He's been able to give this team now 15 points, 4 rebounds yesterday. Prior to that, 3 points and 3 boards after last season. He was actually able to be relatively solid. Vince Williams Jr. has been able to give this team 10 points per game, but you take a look at Baylor, and you've got so many options with this team. You've got some of the best sharpshooters in all of college basketball, like Adam Flagler, who wound up coming over from Presbyterian a few years ago. This is someone that going into yesterday was shooting about 36% from 3-point range. Last year was able to average 9 points per game. I do like what you're able to get out of Matthew Meyer as well. He's been able to give this team double figures. He's capable of giving you right around 5 boards, a block per game at 6'9". Does a good job of being a pop threes as well. And then you've got Jonathan Chalmo-Chachua along with Flo Thamba down low. Chachua is giving you right around 8 or 9 rebounds per game. Thamba is just really a glue guy that wound up having double figures yesterday. I think that VCU is going to have a tough time with that. VCU is a bunch of which they don't have a lot of outside shooting. They don't necessarily have the size inside to be able to match up with Baylor. So I think it's going to be a rough go ever for them. And VCU looking to play as slow as humanly possible. I think that Baylor is going to oblige and just beat them at their game. So, wound up setting Baylor as a 15.5 point favorite, and the total 131.5. We move on to 793, 794 on the betting board. Syracuse and Arizona State also doing battle out there in the Battle for Atlantis. Wound up setting Arizona State as a 3-point favorite. They actually got off to a relatively decent start against Baylor, and then towards the end of the first half and into the second half, they just wound up getting taken to task. They just could not hold on to the ball to save their lives as they wound up committing so many turnovers, 15 turnovers in the first 33 minutes of the game. But you take a look at Arizona State, and you do have a good sharpshooter for this team in DJ Horn. He's been able to give this team double figures, shooting over 40% from three-point range overall for the season. Alonzo Gaffney is someone that has good athleticism, but he needs to be able to do a little bit more on the offensive end. He wound up having as many points as myself yesterday. Kamani Lawrence is someone that has been able to average a double-double for this team. Going into yesterday, 16 points, 10 rebounds. Wound up having a rough go of it yesterday, but when you take a look flip side for Syracuse, you've got Boeheim squared. Jimmy and Buddy Boeheim, and then obviously Jim Boeheim is the coach of this team. So you've really got Boeheim cube, but I take a look at this bunch, and they're not playing any defense whatsoever. They wound up giving up a 100 spot to Colgate, and giving up 67 to VCU is almost that bad. You take a look at both of the Boeheims here, registering right around 40 points per game as a collective, but who's going to be able to step up around them? You've got someone in Joe Girard who's been able to chip in their 17 points, but he's a little bit inconsistent. Wound up entering into yesterday, shooting 81% from three. You knew that that was going to fall off. Cole Swider went 2 of 14 from the floor yesterday. Now, he's going to shoot better. Well, he's had Villanova last year. It's right around 40% three-point shooter, but I do think that you're going to see a bit more of a scoring game. I think that both of these offenses are going to be in rhythm. I think that it's going to be a little bit tough for both of these defenses as well, though. You still have the hard rims as well. So I did wind up setting this total at a 147, and I wound up making Arizona State a three-point favorite. 785, 786 on the betting board. You've got Dayton, and they're going to be taking on Miami. The Hurricanes are finding themselves between 5 and 5.5 point favorites, and your total on this game is between 136.5 and 137, and I'm going to be taking a look at the under in this spot because you've got a Dayton team that has not been playing with a lot of tempo for one, and two, they just have looked, quite frankly, really bad when it comes to the offensive side of things. You've got a Dayton bunch in which you've got Tumani Kamara. He winds up coming in from Georgia. He's been able to give this team 11 points, 7 boards per game, and Malachi Smith is a good, versatile player for this team. Comes in as a freshman. He's been able to dole all 2.5 assists. He's been able to give this team right around 7 points per game. A solid 3-point shooter just hasn't taken a lot of threes, but the pieces for Dayton at this point just are not meshing together. Elijah Weaver, I was expecting more out of him in the backcourt. He's shooting 21% from three, and Dayton has a collective 23% from 3-point range. Now, Miami is not necessarily the world's greatest team at being able to guard the arc, but you do take a look at this bunch, and I do like what you're able to get out of Isaiah Wong and Cam Augusti, a duo that's averaging 35 points, a little bit over 10 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals. Now, neither of these guys are lighting it up from three as a collective. You got Miami shooting about 29% from three, but also keep in mind, this is a game that is going to be played in Orlando, Florida, so it's a pseudo home game for Miami. Obviously, Miami's a couple hours away from Orlando, but you got to figure that they're going to have a little bit more of a home contingency in this one. You got Sam Wartenberg, who came back after being injured all of last year. The 6'10 gentleman has been able to give the team 7 points, 6 boards, shooting 40% from 3-point range. I don't think that Dayton is going to be able to match up with that, though. Jerron Holmes has been able to give you a little bit of this and that, 7 points, 4 boards. But I take a look at Dayton. It's been really brutal for them on offense. Miami, not necessarily a team that has lit it up in recent years when it comes to their scoring as well. So this is a spot in which I did wind up setting Miami as a 7-point favorite, so willing to lay it here. Even with Lake Game Folly, set the total at 133.5, so diving under as well. 797, 798 on the betting board. You've got Kansas and North Texas. I wound up having Kansas as a 15.5 point favorite personally, and I'm seeing the line at 14.5 with Kansas, and your total is 131. I wound up setting the total at a 130.5, so here at 131, barely diving under, though. I would like to see this either go up or down a little bit more, because if we wind up getting down to a 130 or lower, I'd be taking a look at the over end. I do think that North Texas is going to be able to give Kansas a little bit of a battle, but I've got Kansas as my power-rated number 2 team in all of college basketball, and I do think that they're going to take it to a North Texas team that they're missing a couple pieces from last year, including Javion Hamlet, which that is very big. You've been able to have a guy in Martez McBride give this team 11 points, 4 boards. He's shooting 35% from 3, and for North Texas, they do a good job of not turning the ball over, 10.7 turnovers per game. They've been able to generate a little bit over 9 steals per game as well, but keep in mind for Kansas, first 3 games of the season were without Jalen Wilson, a guy that was able to give the team 12 points, 8 boards per game. That was a team high. He is not going to be back for this team. You've also got Remy Martin. He's been able to chip in there 10 points, 5 boards, a couple of assists. Got a Kansas team that, in general, shooting 52% from the floor, 38% from 3, and they're turning the ball over fewer than 10 times per game. Christian Braun is a very versatile player, giving you 11 points, 7.5 rebounds, 6'6" combo player, shooting right around 34% from three. Oshae Ogbaji has looked like an All-American this year with 26 points per game. North Texas has never necessarily been a team with ideal size as well, so I think that that's really going to take a lot out of them with guys like David McCormick and company on the other side. And Jaime Wright, the Washington transfer, just 3 points this year. He has not done anything for this team. So I take a look at this spot. Wound up saying Kansas is 15.5 point favorite. Willing to lay it here. Here at 131 or higher, going to be taking a look at the under as well. 799, 800 on the betting board. You've got yourself Iona taking on Alabama. Alabama is finding themselves as a 12-point favorite, and your total on this game, you're getting it anywhere between 147.5 and 148. I did wind up making this total 149, and the reason why is because I think Iona is going to be able to hang in there. I think that they're going to force some late-game fouling to push this total over, as I wind up making this a 9-point spread. When it comes to Alabama, you certainly have a good backcourt when it comes to this team. Jaden Shackelford, along with Javon Quinterly have both been really doing a good job of being able to fill it up for Shackelford. He's giving you 19.5 points per game. Quinterly, 15.5 points per game. Shackelford chipping in their 7 boards. Quinterly, 4 assists per game. You've got Shackelford shooting about 36% from 3, and Alabama only shooting 31% from 3, despite the fact that they're putting up 89 points per game. Shows the efficiency of this team. Keon Ellis has been able to give you 14.5 points, 8.5 boards per game. Charles Badeko down low has been able to give you 5 boards. Noah Gurley has been versatile with his 6'9" frame, able to shoot some threes. But then for Iona, you've got Nelly Jr. Joseph, who is just a matrix at being able to fill up every statistical category. 16.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, a block and a half per game. He has been absolutely tremendous. 3.5 fouls per game as well. That's not necessarily one that you want to be filling up, but he's had at least 12 points in every one of the team's games thus far this season. He's been able to do a very nice job down low with 2+ blocks in 3 of the team's last 4 games. And then you take a look at the backcourt of Iona. You've got Tyson Jolly, who came in from SMU. 16 points, 5 boards per game. He's shooting 46% from 3, and as a collective, you've got Iona shooting 35% from 3-point range. They don't necessarily generate a lot of steals, but the 8 blocks per game means that they're going to be able to hold up at the point of attack. I do think that Alabama is going to be able to heat up a little bit from 3-point range, but I do think that Iona is going to be able to knock down some shots. They're going to be able to hold up down low, so I want to make Iona a 9-point underdog, so I'm going to be taking the points here with Iona, and when I set this total, made it a 149, so taking a look at an over as well. 801, 802 on the betting board. Belmont and Drake are going to be doing battle, and this is going to be out there in Orlando, Florida as well. Drake is a 2-point favorite, and your total on this game is 149.5. Want to make Drake a 3.5 point favorite. Now, I recognize the game was against LSU, but I did not like what I wound up seeing out of Belmont a few days ago in that game against LSU, in which they just pretty much got ran off the court. You got a Belmont bunch. You do have Nick Mazuzinski, who's able to give you 15 points, 6 boards per game, but Garrett Sturts has been very sturdy for this Drake team. He stands just 6'3", but he does a nice job of being able to fill it up. 8 points, 8 boards, shooting 50% from 3-point range, giving you a steal per game. A very wily veteran. Both of these teams are very old guys. I mean, you've got seniors plus on pretty much both sides. Roman Penn has been playing college basketball for a very long time. 12 points, 4 assists, shooting 33% from 3-point range. And then you've got Grayson Murphy, who just does a great job of giving you everything. 10 points, 6 boards, 5 assists, shooting 50% from 3 steals per game. But I take a look at Drake, and I think a big key for this team is that they do bring in a top 200 freshman in Tucker DeVries, the son of Mr. Dan DeVries, and he's been able to give the team 11 points, 5 boards, and he has been able to give this team a little bit of boost, chipping in there a block per game. So I think that that has been very beneficial for Drake. Shaquan Hemphill was the team's really top scorer last year before he wound up getting injured. He's back in the fold as well. You got a pair of teams that are very versatile, a pair of teams that are two of the most efficient in all of college basketball when it comes to scoring. And I feel like Drake just plays a little bit more defense than Belmont, which is why I did wind up making Drake a 3.5 point favorite. I think that you wind up getting some late game fouling. So set this total at a 153.5 as well. So going over, and I'm going to be laying the points here with the Bulldogs of Drake. We go to 803, 804 on the betting board as we go to lovely Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Classic. South Alabama and San Diego are going to be doing battle. San Diego is finding themselves a 3 to 3.5 point favorite, and your total on this game is anywhere between 136.5 and 137. I flipped it. I wanted making our good friend South Alabama a 2-point favorite. I absolutely love the way that the transfer portal has been utilized by the South Alabama team. You wound up seeing them take Wichita State to the brink. They push Alabama as well. This is a bunch in which they are able to play some very good basketball. They seem to have some good camaraderie with them, with the headliner being Charles Manning Jr. Manning Jr. comes in from LSU, 15 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, shooting 87.5% the free throw line. Down low, Marshall Kearing has been able to give you 8 boards per game as well with South Alabama. They're a team that they do a good job of being able to play at a slow pace. They don't necessarily have a deep rotation, but everyone just knows their role and they know it very well. You've got someone in Javon Franklin who comes in from Auburn, 10 points, 7.5 rebounds. He has been rock solid. And then J.J. Chandler, the Texas A&M transfer, 37.5% 3-point shooter with 14.5 points per game. And then you take a look at San Diego. They had a nice win over Nevada, but that is being a little bit more diminished by how now Nevada has been playing recently. Jace Townsend has been able to give you 14 points, 3.5 assists per game. Terrell Brown should be the best little post player down low. Comes in for Pittsburgh. He has been able to give you right around 9.5 rebounds per game. And then you've got Joey Calcaterra. He has been able to chip in their 12 points per game. And Marcellius Erlington has been able to give you right around around 11.5 as well. Both of these guys combining to shoot just below 50% from three. As San Diego, I feel like they've been a tad bit lucky this year. They're shooting 48% from three-point range. South Alabama has done a solid job when it comes to their overall defense. They do give up the arc a little bit, but I do think that San Diego get a cool down on a neutral court. I think that it's going to be a slow and controlled game. Set the total at 134.5 and made South Alabama a two-point favorite. So I'm going to be taking South Alabama on the money line to be able to go along with this total under. 805-806 on the betting board. UIC, Illinois, Chicago is going to be playing against Hawaii. The Rainbow Warriors are anywhere between a one-point favorite to a pick'em, and your total is 133.5. I wound up setting this total at a 134.5 because I do think that when you get this close of a game, it's going to come down to late game fouling, and I made UIC the favorite. I made them a favorite of 2.5 points, so I'm going to be taking a look at them as a pick'em slash a very, very small money line underdog. It might be a case in which I'm just winding up getting like even money instead of just laying a point, getting a point, what have you. So that's probably just going to be a little bit more of a juice play than anything else, taking them to win outright. But when it comes to UIC, I do think that they're a well-coached team. You've got Luke Yaklich, who winds up coming in after he was one of the big masterminds of Michigan's defense when they wanted to make in the title game a few seasons ago. You've got Demaria Franklin. He comes in from Tennessee Tech, is able to give this team 16 points, 8.5 rebounds. He's done a good job of being able to lessen the turnovers that really hurt UIC last year. UIC was a walking turnover machine, and now this year, 11.5 turnovers per game. That's pretty promising. They're shooting 35% from three. Zion Griffin is giving you 11 points per game, so that has been good. And then you take a look at Hawaii, and you've got Noel Coleman. He's been able to give the team 17 points per game. He's chipping in there right around 3 assists per game. And Jerome DeSurius winds up coming in from Princeton. He looks like that 40-year-old dude at the YMCA, but hey, he's giving the team 9 rebounds and right around 10 points per game, but depth is not really there with this Hawaii team either. Got the Rainbow Warriors currently shooting 80% the free throw line, which is something that you do like, but they only generate 4 steals per game as well. So I do think that this is going to be a little bit of a slower game, but I think that both of these teams are going to be able to find some open shots. I just think that the backcourt in general of UIC is going to be able to win the day in this spot. So wound up setting UIC as a 2.5-point favorite, taking them as a pickup slash a money line underdog. And with setting my total at 134.5, going to be going over as well. 807-808 on the betting board. UAB is going to be taking on New Mexico in lovely Las Vegas, as you've got UAB at 13.5-point favorite and your total in this game is 147. This New Mexico team has been one of the most undervalued in all of college basketball. UAB is a good squad. They wound up ranking in the top 5 in points allowed on a per possession basis last season, but I cannot make this line that high. I want to make UAB a 6-point favorite. So we're certainly going to be taking a look at New Mexico now with UAB. What I like is that they brought in Jordan Walker. He's been able to give the team 17 points, a little bit over 5 assists last year, was a starter at Tulane that was able to give the team 13 points per game. So that is solid. Trey Jamison is going to be the best little post player in this game. Began his career at Clemson thus far this year. He's been able to give the team right around a block and a half per game, 8 boards. Actually a halfway decent passer for a big man. But Jethro Muscadin, who winds coming in from Kansas, he's been able to give this team 6 boards per game. You've got Jalen House, who is absolutely tremendous out there in the backcourt. 19.5 points, 4.5 assists, shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range, has been able to give the team 3.3 steals per game. New Mexico has been looking to run it and gun it. UAB, they're playing a little bit faster than last year, but still, they've got their defensive roots as well. This is a bunch of which are generating 14.6 steals per game. That is absolutely incredible. Quan Jackson has been one of the top steals getters in all of college basketball the last few years. 2.6 steals per game. He's chipping in there 15 points per game. Michael Ertl has been able to give you over 3 steals, 12 points per game himself. UAB as a collective is shooting 37% from 3, but I do think that things are going to be ratcheted down a little bit more. The Orleans has some pretty unforgiving rims as well, so I did wind up setting this total at 142, but could only make UAB a 6-point favorite. I think that New Mexico is going to be able to hang in there, so I'm going to be taking the points along with this total under. 809, 810 on the betting board. You've got San Francisco, and they're going to be playing against Towson. Towson is a 12-point underdog in your total on this game. It is 137. I want to make it San Francisco a 12.5-point favorite, so here at 12, it pretty much is my max on San Francisco, but I am willing to lay it. This is going to be a 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific tip, so got to figure that the Towson players going from east to west going to be a tad bit tired in this one. And when it comes to Towson as well, it certainly is an intriguing bunch because you don't necessarily have ideal size down low for this team. And for San Francisco, you do have someone in Yuan Muslistic who's been able to give you right around 6 points per game. But for Towson, they do have that one guy in 6'5", Cameron Holden, who does it all for this team. 17.5 points, 11.5 boards, 3 assists, shooting shooting about 32% from three-point range, a steal and a half per game, and he doesn't turn the ball over a lot either, so you do like that. But you've got Khalil Shabazz along Jamari Boye on the other end for San Francisco, a duo that is giving you right around 31.5 points per game, 7.5 rebounds, over 5 assists, 4 steals. You've got Boye shooting 38.5% from 3 as a collective. San Francisco is shooting 37% from distance now. With San Francisco, big thing for them is that they've been turning the ball over right around 15 times per game. You've got to tell us a bunch that when it comes to steals per game, they're getting right around 8 per contest. They've been able to do a relatively solid job there, but San Francisco has been able to do a little bit of a better job in the interior as well. Terry Nolan Jr. has come into Towson. He's been able to give the team 13 points per game, but is also shooting just 24% from three-point range. When it comes to this Towson Tigers bunch, it's been a team in which they've not necessarily played a lot of defense, and their shooting has been a tad bit off as well. They're shooting from three-point range right around 27.5% from three. I think that that's going to be a little bit tough for them. I do think that San Francisco is going to be able to kick up the tempo a little bit, and they're going to be able to take it to a Towson team that they don't play fast, but they play inefficient. So won't delay the 12-year with San Francisco. Set the total at 146.5, so going over as well. 8-11, 8-12 on the betting board. We go out to the Bahamas as you've got Maryland and Richmond doing battle. Richmond is a one-point underdog, and your total in this game is anywhere between 139.5 and 140. I mean, Maryland, a four-point favorite. When it comes to Richmond, you've got a very old team, but just because they're old doesn't mean that they're good, and it's a spot in which I think that Richmond is going to be in for a little bit of a letdown. I just don't know how you wind up matching up with Kudus Wahab. Wahab has been able to give this Maryland team right around 8 boards, 2 blocks per game. Dante Scott has been able to do a nice job as well. 10 points, 8 boards. Last year shot 44% from three-point range. He's given the team a block per game as well. Now you've got Tyler Burton along with Grant Golden. Burton has been able to give this team right in the neighborhood about 7.5 boards, 19 points per game, shooting over 50% from three. Richmond as a collective shooting 41% from three. Maryland, if they do have a deficiency when it comes to defense, they do give up the arc a little bit, but Maryland does typically a good job of being able to get their tempo. This is a bunch that in the last 5 years of college basketball is ranked in the bottom 85 with regards to possessions per game every single year. And for Richmond, they don't hit their free throws. They're shooting 60% at the free throw line. They don't turn the ball over a lot, which is good, but Maryland, they don't thrive on turnovers themselves, so that is no issue there. Nick Sherrod has not looked the same since coming back from his injury. 8 points per game, shooting about 38.5%. Except for three, but you can tell that he's not what he was 2 seasons ago. Now, Jacob Gelliard is terrific. 11 points, nearly 6 assists. He's been able to give the team 3.5 steals per game over the last 3 years of college basketball. Might be the best steals getter in all of college basketball, but I do think that Eric Ayala is going to be able to push Maryland over the top. Been able to give the team 15.5 points, 4.5 boards, 2.5 assists. I do think that he's going to be able to come in and do a good job. He's been the constant for the team, 11 plus points in each of the team's first 5 games. So, wound up setting Maryland as a 4-point favorite, and wound up setting this total at a 136 as well. So, diving under and taking Maryland. 8-13, 8-14 is the New York Post play of the day as you've got Mississippi State taking on Louisville. Louisville's a 1-point underdog. Toronto's game is anywhere between 132.5 and 133.5. Chris Mack, once again, not going to be on the sidelines for Louisville, and I just don't like what I'm seeing from this Louisville team in general. It has been shocking how bad it has been for them thus far, and when it comes to what you're going to be able to get out of Mississippi State, this team ranks in the top 10 with regards to rebound rate in all of college basketball. They wind up bringing Garrison Brooks, 11.5 points, 7.5 boards. He's been able to do a terrific job for a Mississippi State team that is currently shooting 45.5% from three-point range. Now, you've also got a Mississippi State team that they're generating 10.5 steals per game. In terms of steals on a per-possession basis, they are in the top 20 in all of college basketball. Louisville, they are in the bottom 150. When it comes to turnovers on a per-possession basis on offense, you can tell that they're a little bit disjointed. They wound up having Mason Faulkner, a guy that's going to be looked to have the ball in his hands a lot, come in late in general, so he is not necessarily up to speed. He hasn't been able to have the coaching of Chris Mack in games either. He's only given the team 4 points per game after he had 17 points per game last season at Western Carolina. Now, you do have Malik Williams. He should be able to hold up down low for Louisville. He's been able to give the team 9.5 rebounds per game. And then you've got Samuel Williamson, who's able to fill it up 8.5 points, 6.5 boards. But you've also got a Louisville team that they shoot right around 67.5% at the free throw line. They've been a little bit out of sorts. They've got one double-digit scorer, Noah Locke, giving you 17 points per game. But with Mississippi State, Iverson Molinar, walking bucket getter, you've got him giving you 16 points, 4 boards, 5 assists. And now you've got Rocket Watts becoming healthy as well. So I wound up saying Mississippi State as an 8-point favorite. New York Post play of the day, Mississippi State laying the points. I set the total at 131.5 because I think that Mississippi State is going to just completely swallow Louisville whole, and Louisville seems to be playing at a slow tempo as well. So diving under, and New York Post play of the day, Mississippi State laying the points. 8-15, 8-16 on the betting board. We go out to the Anaheim Convention Center for the Wooden Legacy Challenge. St. Joe's and USC. USC is an 18 to an 18.5 point favorite. Your total in this game is anywhere between 147 and 147.5. I do think that St. Joe's is going to get bludgeoned a little bit in this game. Could only say USC as a 17.5 point favorite, though. So I'm going to be looking to take 18 to 18.5 here with St. Joe's. With St. Joe's, you do have a little bit of versatility with this team. Now, the big problem that you're going to have if you're St. Joe's is being able to match up with Isaiah Mobley. He has come back from last year, obviously. His brother is currently playing in the NBA. But when it comes to Isaiah, he's been able to give this team a lot, as he's been able to give the team 7 boards. He's able to give you a couple blocks. He's able to shoot some threes as well. And Chavez Goodwin joins him down low, and he has looked very good. The Wofford transfer, 15 points, 8 boards after he didn't play a whole heck of a lot last season. Now, Ajike Obiana has been able to give you right around 7.5 boards per game for this St. Joe's team. He's also chipping in their 10 points last year at Vanderbilt. Was able to see a couple starts as well. Was always a little bit more of a defensive stopper, so he's been able to come in, do a nice job for the team. And you've got Jordan Hall, Mr. Do Everything for the team. 6'7" combo player. That's giving you 15 points, 7.5 rebounds, 6 assists, shooting in the 32 percentile as well with a steal and a half per game. So I like what he's able to do. Now it's all about being able to get guys to be able to help him out. And you've got the Funk, Taylor Funk, 18.5 points per game, shooting 51% from three. Now Boogie Ellis on the other side, 17 points per game, solid three-point shooter. In USC as a collective is a bunch that is shooting 36% from three, but also 62% at the free throw line. They don't turn the ball over a lot, but when it comes to St. Joe's, they do play a little bit of the Ole style of defense, so I'm going to be setting the total at 151.5. I'm going to be looking at the over, but here at 18 to 18.5, gotten up a little bit too lofty, so I'm going to be taking the points. 8-17, 8-18 on the betting board. San Diego State is going to be taking on Georgetown out there in Anaheim. San Diego State is a 5.5 point favorite in your totals between 132.5 and 133. This is a Georgetown team that I think that they're going to be playing a little bit slower than they did last year, but I think that this is a total that is a tad bit too low. I did wind up setting this total at 135 because I do think that you're going to be right in that prime 6-point differential with about a minute left, and then you wind up seeing some late game fouling. I did wind up setting San Diego State as a 6.5 point favorite, so I'm going to be looking to lay it here. But with Matt Bradley coming into San Diego State, I honestly expected a little bit more out of him. He's only shooting 18% from three. I think that'll pick up. He's a career about 40% 3-point shooter. He hasn't necessarily given out the ball a whole heck of a lot. He's giving you 5 rebounds per game, but it has been good in the backcourt from Trey Pulliam. 10.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 3 assists. A guy that's able to be a pretty solid 3-point shooter, and I do think that Nathan Mensah and Amino Mohammed are going to be able to neutralize each other down low. Both guys are giving their respective teams right around 8 rebounds per game. I was expecting a lot more out of Ryan Mutombo. He's only getting 11 minutes per game. 3 points per contest has not necessarily been a good look for this team. You've also got Donald Carey. He's been able to do a solid job for this Georgetown bunch. He has been able to chip in their 15.5 points per game and shooting 61% from 3 after he shot 45% last season. There was fear that he might be dealing with a little bit of an injury. He shook it off last game. Looks like he's good to go. And Caden Rice, the Citadel transfer, 11 points per game for a Georgetown Bunchhead is shooting 41.5% from three-point range, and they do force 9 steals per game, but I do think that San Diego State is going to be able to do a good job of being able to play within themselves, not get too undisciplined. They have been turning the ball over 13 times for contests, but I have faith that Brian Dutcher is going to be able to get his guys going online, and I do think that an X-factor is going to be Lamont Butler. The gentleman has been able to give the team right around 8 points per game from three-point range. He's shooting about 34% from distance. He's been able to give the team 2 assists, 2 steals per game, so he does a wide variety of things for them. So did wind up saying Georgetown as a 6.5 point underdog, so looking to lay the points. I did wind up saying this out at 135, so looking to take the over. Now we've got 2 extra games on the betting board.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
Both of these games involve teams I wound up playing yesterday, so you're just going to be getting my numbers on these. 306, 131, 306, 132. New Orleans and Presbyterian are going to be doing battle. I wound up setting New Orleans as a 9-point favorite. New Orleans was able to just completely house Central Arkansas yesterday. That was a very good performance. And New Orleans is a team that I really think could be a competitor as the top team out there in the Southland. Meanwhile, you take a look at the flip side for the Blue Hose of Presbyterian, and you do have a guy that's able to take the top off of defense, and that'd be Rayshon Harrison. Harrison is giving you 20.5 points per game. He's chipping in there nearly 6.5 rebounds per game. 3-point shooting is down this year. Last year, shot 35%. He's shooting more like 20% thus far, but I think that he's going to be able to pick it up. But you take a look at New Orleans. Troy Green has been able to do a good job out there in the backcourt. He's been able to give this team 11 points per game. He's able to dole out 4.5 assists, give you 2 steals per game. Derek St. Hilaire, who wound up beginning his career out there in the Ohio Valley. He's shooting 40% from 3, 90% at the free throw line, 21.5 points per game, 3 assists. So I think that it'll be able to fill it up. And then you've also got for this New Orleans team, Robbie Robinson, who was actually a starter at Nevada a few years ago. He's come in. He's been able to get this team 6.5 boards. He's been able to only chip in there 4.5 points per game while he was a starter at Nevada. He had 3 points, 5 boards per game. So he knows his role. Winston Hill on the other end for Presbyterian, right around 8.5 rebounds per game. as well. So you got some good big men play there. And what I think is going to be the big key for New Orleans here, Deshaun Ellen Eakins. He winds up coming in from North Dakota 2 seasons ago. Was pretty much the best freshman out there in the Summit League when he wound up putting up there 14 points, 5 boards. This year, he's been a little bit shaky to say the least, 6.5 points, right around 4 rebounds per game, but I do think that he's going to be able to pick it up, and I think the Presbyterian has some good frontline talent, but not necessarily a lot of depth. So it is a situation in which I ended up setting New Orleans as a 9-point favorite. In New Orleans, we have seen them with their offense. They're looking to crank it up. They've actually been in the top 5 with regards to overrate in all of college basketball the last 3 years as well. So also made this total 147, and we wrap things up with 306-133, 306-134. VMI and Central Arkansas are going to be doing battle. I said VMI as a 9-point favorite. With Central Arkansas, they were badly overvalued in their game against New Orleans yesterday, and that showed when they got completely dropped like a rock. Meanwhile, for VMI, not quite the same team that they were last season. You can tell that they are missing a few of those cogs like a Greg Parham, but you still have quite a few guys that are leftovers from last season, and I do think that you're going to be able to get a good performance out of Camden Kerfman. Kerfman has been able to give you 18.5 points per game, a guy that last year shot 40% from three. This year, he's shooting more around 44% from three-point range. Jarius Hall on the other end for Central Arkansas has been great. The DePaul transfer has been able to give you 11 points, just under 10 rebounds per game, a guy that's able to pop a couple threes as well. So I do like what he's doing, but for Central Arkansas, you don't have a single guy giving you more than 2.5 assists per game. Meanwhile, for VMI, you got a little bit more offensive cohesion, and you've got a guy in 6'11", Jake Stevens, who is absolutely terrific. He has been able to register 14 points per game. He's able to give you 7 boards, right around 3 assists, shooting 40% from three-point range. That versatility is going to be hard for Central Arkansas to match up with. Central Arkansas, year in and year out, has always been an up-tempo team. They just are very sloppy, to say the least. They have been turning the ball over right around 19 times per contest. I think that that's going to nip them in the butt against a VMI team that they don't necessarily generate a lot of steals, but they certainly aren't afraid to run either. So set VMI as a 9-point favorite and made this total 153. And that will wrap things up for the Thursday Thanksgiving Day edition of Coast to Coast Hoops. A big thanks to our good friend Jason Radowitz, doing some great work over there with covers and so many other platforms, for joining me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you've got one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, it does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, that is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Going to be coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll